I should think that would be obvious.
It's not.
She resisted the question, crossing her arms as if to protect herself. It's rude of you to ask.
It's rude of me to climb your trellis and invade your quarters, too.
So it is. And then, for a reason she would never fully understand, she answered his question, letting frustration and worry and a very real sense of impending doom pour over her. Because I'm the epitome of ordinary. Because I'm not beautiful, or diverting, or a stellar conversationalist. And though I once thought it impossible to believe I'd land myself an aging spinster, here we are, and no one has ever really wanted me. And I don't expect that to start now, with a handsome duke. He was silent for a long moment, her embarrassment raging. Please leave, she said.
You seem to be fairly stellar at conversation with me.
She ignored the fact that he hadn't disagreed with her other assessments. You're a stranger in the darkness. Everything is easier in the dark.
Nothing is easier in the dark, he said. But that's irrelevant. You're wrong, and that's why I'm here.
To convince me that I'm good at conversation. Teeth flashed, and he stood, filling the room with his height. Felicity's nerves thrummed as she considered the shape of him, beautifully long, with a hint of broad shoulders and lean hips.
I came to give you what you want, Felicity Faircloth.
The promise in his whisper coursed through her. Was it fear she felt, or something else? She shook her head. You can't, though. No one can.
You want the flame, he said softly.
She shook her head. I don't.
Of course you do. But it's not all you want, is it?
He took a step closer to her, and she could smell him, warm and smoky, as though he'd come from somewhere forbidden.
You want all of it. The world, the man, the money, the power, and something else as well.
He came closer still, towering over her, his warmth flooding her, heady and tempting.
Something more.
His words became a whisper.
Something secret.
She hesitated, hating that he seemed to know her, this stranger. Hating that she wanted to reply. Hating that she did.
More than I can have. And who told you that, my lady? Who told you you could not have it all?
Her gaze fell to his hand, with the silver handle of his walking stick tucked between his large, strong fingers, the silver ring on his index finger glinting up at her. She studied the pattern of the metal, trying to discern the shape on the cane. After what seemed like an age, she looked to him. Have you a name?
Devil.
Her heart raced at the word, which seemed somehow completely ridiculous and utterly perfect. That's not your real name.
It's strange how we put such value on names, don't you think, Felicity Faircloth? Call me whatever you like, but I'm a man who can give you all of it. Everything you wish.
She didn't believe him, obviously. Not at all. Why me? He reached for her then, and she knew she should have stepped back. She knew she shouldn't have let him touch her, not when his fingers ran down her left cheek, leaving fire in their wake, as though he were leaving his scar upon her, a mark of his presence. But the burn of his touch was nothing like pain, especially not when he replied,
Why not you?
Why not her? Why shouldn't she have what she wanted? Why shouldn't she make a deal with this devil who had appeared from nowhere and would soon be gone? I want not to have lied, she said.
I cannot change the past, only the future. But I can make good on your promise.
Spin straw into gold.
Ah, so we are in a storybook after all.
He made it all sound so easy, so possible, as though he might work a miracle in the night without any effort at all. It was madness, of course. He could not change what she'd said. The lie she'd told, bigger than all of them. Doors had closed all around her earlier that evening, locking her out of every conceivable path, shutting out her future, the future of her family. Arthur's helplessness flashed, her mother's desperation, their twin resignation, unpickable locks. And now this man, brandishing a key.
You can make it true. His hand turned, the heat of him against her cheek, along her jaw, and for a fleeting moment he was a fairy king. She was in his thrall.
The engagement is easy, but that isn't all you wish, is it?
How did he know? His touch spread fire down the column of her throat, fingers kissing the swell of her shoulder.
Tell me the rest, Felicity Faircloth. What else does the princess in the tower desire? The world at her feet, and her family rich once more, and...
The words trailed off, filling the room until her reply burst from her. I want him to be the moth. He lifted his hand from her skin, and the loss was keen. I wish to be the flame. He nodded, his lips curling like sin, his colourless eyes dark in the shadows, and she wondered if she would feel less in his thrall if she could see their colour.
You wish to tempt him to you.
A memory flared, a husband, desperate for his wife, a man desperate for his love, a passion that could not be denied, or for a woman who held every inch of power. I do.
Be careful with temptation, my lady. It is a dangerous proposition.
You make it sound as though you've experienced it as such.
That's because I have.
You're barbarous. Was the woman his wife, his mistress, his love? Why did Felicity care?
Passion cuts both ways.
It needn't, she said, feeling suddenly, keenly, strangely comfortable with this man whom she did not know. I hope to eventually love my husband, but I needn't be consumed by him.
You wish to do the consuming.
She wished to be wanted, beyond reason. She wished to be ached for.
You wish for him to fly into your flame.
Impossible, she answered him. When you are ignored by the stars, you wonder if you might ever burn bright. Immediately embarrassed by the words, Felicity turned away, breaking the spell, cleared her throat. It does not matter. You cannot change the past. You cannot erase my lie and make it truth. You cannot make him want me. Not even if you were the devil. It's impossible.
Poor Felicity Faircloth, so concerned about what is impossible.
It was a lie, she said. I've never even met the Duke.
And here is truth. The Duke of Marwick shan't deny your claim.
Impossible. And yet, there was a tiny part of her that hoped he was right. If that, she might be able to save them all. How? He smirked.
Devil's magic.
She raised a brow. If you can make it so, sir, you will have earned your silly name.
Most people find my name unsettling.
I am not most people.
That much, Felicity Faircloth, is true.
She did not like the warmth that spread through her at the words, and so she ignored it. And you would do it out of the goodness of your heart. Forgive me if I do not believe that, devil. He inclined his head.
Of course not. There's nothing good about my heart. When it is done and you have won him heart and mind, I shall come and collect my fee.
I suppose this is the part where you tell me the fee is my firstborn child. He laughed at that, low and secret, like she'd said something more amusing than she'd realized. And then,
what would I do with a mewling babe?
Her lips twitched at that. I haven't anything to give you. He looked at her for a long moment.
You undersell yourself, Felicity Faircloth.
My family hasn't any money to give, she said. You said so yourself.
If they did, you would not be in this predicament, would you?
She scowled at his matter-of-fact assessment, at the helplessness that flared with the words. How do you know it?
That Earl Grout and the Marquis of Bumble have lost a fortune. Darling, all of London knows that, even those of us who aren't invited to Marwick's balls.
She scowled. I didn't know.
Not until they needed you to.
Not even then, she grumbled. Not until I could do nothing to help. He tapped his walking stick twice on the floor.
I am here, am I not?
She narrowed her gaze on him. For a price?
Everything has a price, darling.
And I assume you already know yours.
I do, as a matter of fact.
What is it?
He smiled, the expression wicked.
Telling you that would remove the fun.
A tingle spread through her, across her shoulders and down her spine, warm and exciting, and terrifying and hopeful. What price her family, comfortable in their security? What price her reputation as an oddity, yes, but never a liar? And what price a husband with no knowledge of her past? Why not deal with this devil? An answer whispered through her, a promise of something dangerous. And still, temptation thundered through her, but first, assurance. If I accept, that smirk again, as though he were a cat with a canary. If I accept, she repeated with a scowl, he shan't deny the engagement. The devil inclined his head.
No one will ever know of your fabrication, Felicity.
And he shall want me.
Like air, he said.
The word's a lovely promise. It wasn't possible. The man was not the devil. And even if he were, not even God could erase the events of the evening and make the Duke of Marwick marry her. But what if he could? Bargains cut both ways, and this man did seem more exciting than most. Perhaps in the loss of the impossible passion he promised her, she could win something else. She met his gaze. And if you cannot do it, do I collect a favor from you? He was silent, and then...
Are you certain you wish a favor from the devil?
It seems that would be a far more useful favor than one from someone who is perfectly good all the time, she pointed out. The brow above his scar rose in amusement.
Fair enough. If I fail, you may claim a favor from me.
She nodded and extended her hand for a proper handshake, one she regretted the moment his large hand slid into hers. It was warm and big, rough at the palm in a way that evoked work far beyond anything polite gentlemen performed. It was delicious, and she released him immediately.
You should not have agreed, he added.
Why not?
Because nothing good comes from deals made in the dark.
He reached into his pocket and brandished a calling card.
I shall see you two nights hence, unless you require me beforehand.
He dropped the card to the little table next to the chair Felicity thought she might think of as his for the rest of time now.
Lock this door behind me. You wouldn't want a nefarious character coming in while you are asleep.
Locks didn't keep the first nefarious character out of my room tonight. One side of his mouth kicked up.
You're not the only lockpick in London, love.
She blushed as he tipped his hat and exited through the balcony doors, before she could deny his lockpicking, his silver cane flashing in the moonlight. By the time she reached the edge of the balcony, he was gone, snatched up by the night. She returned inside and locked the door, her gaze falling to the calling card there. Lifting it, she considered the elaborate insignia there. BKB. The back offered an address, a street she'd never heard of, and underneath, in the same masculine scrawl, with the devil's welcome. Chapter 6. Two nights later, as the last rays of the sun faded into darkness, the bare-knuckle bastards picked through the dirty streets of the farthest reaches of Covent Garden, where the neighborhood known for taverns and theatres gave way to one known for crime and cruelty. Covent Garden was a maze of narrow, labyrinthine streets, twisting and turning in upon themselves, until an ignorant visitor was trapped in its spider's web. A single wrong turn after leaving the theatre could see a toff liberated of his purse and tossed into the gutter, or worse. The streets leading deep into the garden's rookery were not kind to visitors, especially proper gentlemen dressed in even more proper finery. The devil and wit weren't proper, and they weren't gentlemen, and everyone there knew better than to cross the bare-knuckle bastards, no matter what finery they wore. What's more, the brothers were revered in the neighborhood, having come up from the slums themselves, fighting and thieving and sleeping in filth with the best of them. And no one likes a rich man like a poor man with the same beginnings. It didn't hurt that much of the bastard's business ran through this particular rookery, where strong men and smart women worked for them, and good boys and clever girls kept watchful eye for anything out of sorts, reporting their findings for a fine gold crown, A crown could feed a family for a month here, and the bastards spent money in the muck like it was water, which made them and their businesses untouchable.
Mr. Beast!
A little girl tugged on Wit's trouser leg, using the name he used with all but his siblings.
It's here! When are we having lemon ice again?
Wit stopped and crouched down, his voice rough from disuse and deep with the accent of their youth, which only ever came back here.
Listen here, Moppet. We don't talk about ice in the streets.
The girl's bright blue eyes went wide. Wit ruffled her hair.
You keep our secrets and you'll get your lemon treats, don't you worry.
A gap in the child's smile showed that she'd lost a tooth recently. Wit directed her away.
Go find your mum. Tell her I'm coming for my wash after I've finished at the warehouse.
The girl was gone like a shot. The brothers resumed their walk.
It's good of you to give Mary your wash, Devil said.
Wit grunted. Theirs was one of the few rookeries in London that had fresh communal water, because the bare-knuckle bastards had made sure of it. They'd also made sure it had a surgeon and a priest, and a school where little ones could learn their letters before they had to take to the streets and find work. But the bastards couldn't give everything, and the poor who lived here were too proud to take it anyway. So the bastards employed as many of them as they could, a collection of old and young, strong and smart, men and women from all over the world, Londoners and North Countrymen, Scots and Welsh, African, Indian, Spanish, American. If they made their way to Covent Garden and were able to work, the bastards would provide it at one of their numerous businesses. Taverns and fight rings, butchers and pie shops, tanneries and dye shops, and a half dozen other jaunts spread throughout the neighborhood. If it wasn't enough that Devil and Wit had come up in the muck of the place, the work they provided, for decent wages and under safe conditions, bought the loyalty of the rookery's residents. That was something that other business owners had never understood about the slums, thinking they could hire and work while bellies in spitting distance starved. The warehouse on the far edge of the neighborhood, now owned by the brothers, had once been used to produce pitch, but had long been abandoned when the company that had built it discovered that the residents had no loyalty to them and would steal anything that was left unguarded. Not so when the business employed 200 local men. Entering the building that now acted as the centralized warehouse for any number of the bastards' businesses, Devil nodded to a half dozen men staggered throughout the dark interior. Guarding crates of liquors and sweets, leathers and wool. If it was taxed by the crown, the bare-knuckle bastards sold it and sheep. And no one stole from them, for fear of the punishment promised by their name. One they'd been given decades earlier and stones lighter, when they'd fought with fists faster and stronger than they should have been to claim turf and show enemies no mercy. Devil went to greet the strapping man who led the watch.
All right, John. All right, sir. How's the babe come?
Bright white teeth flashed proudly against dark brown skin.
Last week, a boy, strong as his da.
The new father's satisfied smile was sunlit in the dimly lit room, and Devil clapped him on the shoulder.
I've no doubt about that. And your wife? Healthy, thanks to God. Too good for me by half.
Devil nodded and lowered his voice.
They all are, ma'am. Better than the lot of us combined.
He turned from the sound of John's laughter to find Wit, now standing with Nick, the foreman of the warehouse, young, barely 20, and with a head for organization that Devil had never met in another. Nick's heavy coat, hat and gloves hid most of her skin, and the dim light hid the rest, but she reached out a hand to greet Devil as he arrived.
Where are we, Nick? Devil asked.
The fair-haired Norwegian looked about and then waved them toward the far corner of the warehouse, where a guard reached down to open a door leading into the ground, revealing a great black abyss below. A thread of unease coursed through Devil, and he turned to his brother.
After you.
Wit's hand signal spoke more than words could, but he crouched low and dropped into the darkness without hesitation. Devil went in next, reaching back up to accept an unlit lantern from Nick as she followed them in, looking up to the guard only to say,
Close it up.
The guard did as he was instructed without hesitation, and Devil was certain that the blackness of the cavernous hole was rivaled only by that of death. He worked to keep his breath even, to not remember.
Fuck,
Whit growled in the darkness.
Light!
You have it, Devil.
This in Nick's thick Scandinavian accent. Christ, he'd forgotten he was holding it. He fumbled for the door of the lantern, the dark and his own unsettling emotions making it take longer than usual. But finally, he worked the flint and light came, blessed.
Quickly, then.
Nick took the lantern from him and led the way.
We don't want to make any more heat than necessary.
The pitch-black holding area led to a long, narrow passageway. Devil followed Nick, and halfway down the corridor the air began to grow crisp and cold. She turned and said,
Hats and coats, if you please.
Devil closed his coat, buttoning it thoroughly, as Whit did the same, pulling his hat low over his brow. At the end of the corridor, Nick extracted a ring of iron keys and began to work on a long line of locks set against a heavy metal door. When they were all unlocked, she swung open the door and set to work on a second batch of locks, 12 in total. She turned back before opening the door.
We go in quickly. The longer we leave the door...
Whit cut her off with a grunt.
What my brother means to say, Devil said, is that we've been filling this hold for longer than you've been alive, Annika.
Her gaze narrowed in the lamplight at the use of her full name, but she opened the door.
Go on, then.
Once inside, Nick slammed the door shut, and they were in darkness again, until she turned, lifting the light high to reveal the great, cavernous room, filled with blocks of ice.
How much survived?
100 tons.
Devil let out a low whistle.
We lost 35%.
It's May, Nick explained, pulling the wool scarf off the lower half of her face so she could be heard.
The ocean warms.
And the rest of the cargo?
All accounted for.
She extracted a bill of lading from her pocket.
68 barrels brandy, 43 casks American bourbon, 24 crates silk, 24 crates playing cards, 16 cases dice. Also a box of face powder and 3 crates of French wigs, which are not on the list and I'm going to ignore, other than to assume you want them delivered to the usual location.
Precisely, Devil said. No damage from the melt.
None. It was packed well on the other end.
Whit grunted his approval.
Thanks to you, Nick, Devil said.
She did not hide her smile.
Norwegians like Norwegians.
She paused.
There is one thing.
Two sets of dark eyes found her face.
There was a watch on the docks.
The brothers looked to each other. While no one would dare steal from the bastards in the rookery, the brothers' overland caravans had been compromised twice in the last 2 months, robbed at gunpoint once they'd left the safety of Covent Garden. It was part of the business, but Devil didn't like the uptick in thievery.
What kind of watch?
Nick tilted her head.
Can't say for sure.
Try,
Whit said. Clothes look like dockside competition.
It made sense. There were any number of smugglers working the French and American angles, though none had such an airtight method of import.
But...
She pressed her lips into a thin line.
Boots awfully clean for a Cheapside boy.
Crown.
Always a risk for a smuggling operation.
Possible, Nick said, but she didn't sound sure.
The crates,
Whit asked.
Out of view the whole time. Ice moved by flatbed wagon and horse, crates secure within, and none of our men have seen anything out of the ordinary.
Devil nodded.
The product stays here for a week. No one comes in or out. Get it to the boys on the street to keep an eye out for anyone out of the ordinary.
Nick nodded.
Done.
Whit kicked at an ice block.
And the packaging?
Pure. Good enough to sell.
Make sure the offal shops in the rookery get some tonight. No one eats rancid meat when we've 100 tons of ice to go round.
Devil paused.
And Beast promised the children lemon ice.
Nick's brows rose.
Kind of him.
That's what everyone says,
Devil said, dry as sand.
Oh, that Beast, he's so very kind.
Are you going to mix the lemon syrup too, Beast? She asked with a grin. Wit growled. Devil laughed and slapped a hand on a block of ice.
Send one of these round to the office, will you?
Nick nodded. Already done. And a case of the bourbon from the colonies.
You know me well. I've got to get back.
After a wander through the rookery, he was going to need a wash. He had business on Bond Street. And then he had business with Felicity Faircloth. Felicity Faircloth, with skin that turned gold in the light of a candle, brown eyes wide and clever, full of fear and fire and fury, and able to spar like none he'd met in recent memory. He wanted another spar. He cleared his throat at the thought, turning to look at Wit, who was watching him, a knowing look in his eye. Devil ignored it, pulling his coat tight around him.
What? It's fucking freezing in here.
You're the ones who chose to deal in ice, Nick said.
It's a bad plan, Wit said, looking directly at him.
Well, it's a bit late to change it. The ship, one might say, Nick added with a smirk, has sailed. Devil and Wit did not smile at the silly jest. She didn't realize that Wit wasn't talking about the ice. He was talking about the girl. Devil turned on his heel and headed for the door to the hold.
Come on then, Nick, he said. Bring the light.
She did, and the three exited. Devil refusing to meet Wit's knowing gaze as they waited for Nick to lock the double steel doors and return them through darkness to the warehouse. He continued to evade his brother's watch as they collected Wit's wash and picked their way back to the heart of Covent Garden, weaving their way through the cobblestone streets to their offices and apartments in the large building on Arn Street. After a quarter of an hour of silent walking, Wit said,
You lay your trap for the girl.
Devil didn't like the insinuation in the words.
I lay my trap for them both. You still intend to seduce the girl out from under him? Her and everyone that comes after, if need be,
Devil replied.
He's as arrogant as ever, Beast. He thinks to have his heir.
Wit shook his head.
No, he thinks to have Grace. He thinks we'll give her up to keep him from whelping a new duke on this girl. He's wrong. He gets neither Grace nor the girl. Two carriages careening toward each other, Wit growled. He shall turn.
His brother's eyes found his.
He never has before.
Memory flashed. Ewan, tall and lean, fists raised, eyes swollen, lips split, and refusing to yield, unwilling to back down, desperate to win.
It's not the same. We have hungered longer, worked harder. Dukedom has made the man soft.
Wit grunted.
And Grace. He doesn't find her. He never finds her. We should have killed him.
Killing him would have brought London crashing down around them.
Too much risk. You know that. That, and we made Grace a promise.
Devil nodded.
And that? His return threatens us all, and Grace more than anyone. No,
Devil said.
His return threatens him the most. Remember, if anyone discovers what he did, how he got his title, he swings from a noose. A traitor to the crown.
Wit shook his head.
And what if he's willing to risk it all for a chance at her?
At Grace, the girl he'd once loved. The girl whose future he'd thieved. The girl whom he would have destroyed if not for Devil and Wit.
Then he sacrifices it all, Devil said. He gets nothing.
Wit nodded.
Not even heirs. Never heirs.
Then,
there's always the original plan. We rough the Duke up, send him home. It won't stop the marriage. Not now. Not when he thinks he's close to finding Grace.
Wit flexed one hand, the black leather of his glove creaking with the movement.
It would be glorious fun, though.
They walked in silence for several minutes before Wit added,
Poor girl. She couldn't have predicted how her innocent lie would land her in bed with you.
It was a figure of speech, of course, but the vision came nonetheless, and Devil couldn't resist it. Felicity Faircloth, dark hair and pink skirts spread wide before him, clever and beautiful, and with a mouth like sin. The girl's ruination would be a pleasure. He ignored the thin thread of guilt that teased through him. There was no room for guilt here.
She shan't be the first girl ruined. I'll throw the father money, the brother too. They'll get down on their knees and weep with gratitude for their salvation. Kind of you, Whit said dryly. But what of the girl's salvation? It's impossible. She won't be ruined, she'll be exiled.
I want them to want me back. All Felicity Faircloth wanted was back into that world, and she'd never get it, not even after he promised it to her.
She's free to choose her next husband. Do aristocratic men line up for aging, ruined spinsters?
Something unpleasant coursed through him.
So she settles for someone not aristocratic.
A beat, and then...
Someone like you.
Christ, no. Men like him were so far beneath Felicity Faircloth, the idea was laughable. When he did not reply, Whit grunted again.
Grace can never know.
Of course she can't, Devil replied.
And she won't. She won't be able to stay out of it.
Devil had never been so happy to see the door to their offices. Approaching it, he reached for a key, but before he could unlock the door, a small window slid open, then closed. The door opened, and they stepped inside.
It's about damn time.
Devil's gaze shot to the tall, red-haired woman who closed the door behind them, leaning back against the door, one hand on her hip, as though she'd been waiting for years. He immediately looked to Whit, stone-faced. Whit's dark eyes met his calmly. Grace can never know.
What's happened? Their sister said, looking from one to the other. What's happened with what?
Devil asked, removing his hat.
You look like you did when we were children, and you decided to start fighting without telling me.
It was a good idea.
It was a shite idea, and you know it. You're lucky you weren't killed your first night out, you were so small. You're both lucky I got in the ring.
She rocked back on her heels and crossed her arms over her chest.
Now what's happened?
Devil ignored the question.
You came back from your first night with a broken nose.
She grinned.
I like to think the bump gives me character.
It gives you something, most definitely.
Grace harrumphed and moved on.
I have three things to say, and then I have actual work to do, gentlemen. I cannot be left lazing about here, waiting for the two of you to return.
No one asked you to wait for us, Devil said,
pushing past his arrogant sister toward the dark, cavernous hallways beyond, and up the back stairs to their apartments. She followed, nonetheless.
First is for you, she told Whit, passing him a sheet of paper. There are three fights set for tonight, each at a different place, on the hour and half. Two will be fair, the third filthy. Addresses are here, and the boys are already out taking bets.
Whit grunted his approval, and Grace pressed on.
Second, Calhoun wants to know where his bourbon is. Says if we're having too much trouble getting it in, he'll find one of his countrymen to do the job. Really? Is there anyone more arrogant than an American?
Tell him it's here, but not moving yet, so he can wait like the rest of us. Or feel free to wait the 2 months it will take to get a new order to the States and back.
She nodded.
I assume the same is true for the Fallen Angels delivery.
And everything else we're set to deliver from this shipment.
Grace's eyes narrowed on him.
We're being watched.
Nick thinks it's possible.
His sister pursed her lips for a moment, then said,
If Nick thinks it, it's likely true. Which brings me to third. Did my wigs arrive?
Along with more face powder than you can ever use.
She grinned.
A girl can try, though, can't she?
Our shipments are not designed as your personal pack mule.
Ah, but my personal items are both legal and don't require tax payment, bruv. So it's not the worst thing in the world for you to receive three cases of wigs.
She reached out to rub Devil's tightly shorn head.
Perhaps you'd like one. You could do with more hair.
He swatted his sister's hand away from his head.
If we weren't blood.
She grinned.
We're not blood, as a matter of fact.
They were where it counted.
And yet, for some reason, I put up with you.
She leaned in.
Because I make money hand over fist for you louts.
Wit grunted, and Grace laughed. See? Beast knows. Wit disappeared into his rooms across the hallway, and Devil extracted a key from his pocket, inserting it into the door to his own.
Anything else?
You could invite your sister for a drink, you know. If I know you, you've sorted out a way for your bourbon to arrive on time.
I thought you had work to do.
She lifted a shoulder. Claire can take care of things until I get there.
I stink of the rookery, and I have somewhere to be.
Her brows shot together. Where?
You needn't make it seem as though I've nothing to do in the evenings.
Between sundown and midnight? You don't.
Well, that's not true.
It was vaguely true. He turned the key in the lock, looking back at his sister as he opened the door.
The point is, leave me now.
Whatever retort Grace would have made, and Lord knew Grace always had a retort, was lost on her lips when her blue gaze flickered over his shoulder and into the room beyond, then widened enough for Devil to be concerned. He turned to follow it, somehow impossibly, knowing exactly what he was going to find. Whom he was going to find. Lady Felicity Faircloth, standing at the window at the far side of the room, as though she belonged there. Chapter 7. There was a woman with him. Of all the things Felicity had expected might happen when she feigned illness and snuck from her house at twilight, to summon a hack to take her to the mysterious location scrawled on the back of his calling card, and there were many, she hadn't expected a woman. A tall, striking woman painted to perfection, and with hair like a sunset, dressed in full-tiered amethyst skirts and a decorative corset in the richest aubergine Felicity had ever seen. The woman wasn't properly beautiful, but she was proud and poised and stunningly... stunning. She was the kind of woman men fell for madly. That was no question. Exactly the kind of woman Felicity so often dreamed of being herself. Was Devil mad for her? Felicity had never been happier about standing in a dimly lit room than she was in that moment, her face blazing with panic and every inch of her wanting to flee. The problem was that the man who called himself Devil and his companion were blocking the only exit, unless she considered the possibility of leaping from the window. She turned to look at the darkened panes of glass, gauging the distance to the alleyway below.
Too far for jumping, Devil said,
as though he was in her head. She turned back to face him, brazening through. Are you certain? The woman laughed and answered.
Quite. And the last thing Dev needs is a flattened, titled lady.
She paused, the familiarity of the nickname filling the space between them.
You are titled, are you not?
Felicity blinked.
My father is, yes.
The woman pushed past Devil as though he was not there.
Fascinating. And which title would that be?
He is the...
Don't answer that,
Devil said, coming into the room, setting his hat down on a nearby table and turning the gas up on a lamp there, flooding the space with lush, golden light. He turned to face her, and she resisted the urge to stare. And failed. She properly stared, taking in his heavy greatcoat, too warm for the season, and the tall boots below, caked with mud, as though he'd been cavorting with hogs somewhere. He shucked the coat and sent it over a nearby chair without care, revealing more casual attire than she'd almost ever seen on a member of the opposite sex. He wore a patterned waistcoat over a linen shirt, both in shades of grey, but no cravat. Nothing at all filled the opening of the shirt, nothing but the cords of his neck and a long, deep triangle of skin, dusted with a hint of dark hair. She'd never seen such a thing before, could count on one hand the number of times she'd seen Arthur or her father without a cravat. She'd also never seen anything so thoroughly male in her life. She was consumed by that triangle of skin. After a too long pause, Felicity realized she was staring, and returned her attention to the woman, whose brows were high on her forehead with knowledge of precisely what Felicity had been doing. Unable to face the other woman's curiosity, Felicity's gaze flew back to Devil's.
this time to his face. Another mistake. She wondered if she'd ever get used to how handsome he was. That said, she could certainly do without him looking at her as though she were an insect he'd discovered in his porridge. He didn't seem like the kind of man who ate porridge. He narrowed his gaze on her, and she'd had quite enough of that. What do you eat for breakfast?
Wharton.
He shook his head as though to clear it.
What?
It's not porridge, is it?
Good God, no.
This is fascinating, the woman said.
Not to you, it isn't, he replied.
Felicity bristled at the sharp tone. You shouldn't speak to her that way. The other woman grinned at that.
I completely agree.
Felicity stood.
I think I shall go.
You should not have come, he said.
Oi, you certainly shouldn't speak to her that way, the woman said.
Devil looked to the ceiling as though asking for patience. Felicity moved to pass him.
Wait.
He reached out to stop her.
How did you get here to begin with?
She stopped. You gave me your direction.
And you simply marched over here from Mayfair?
Why does it matter how I arrived? The question agitated him.
Because anything could have happened to you on the journey. You could have been set upon by thieves, kidnapped and ransomed by any number of ruffians.
Her heart began to pound. Nefarious sorts?
Precisely,
he agreed. She feigned innocence. The kind who might sneak into a bedchamber unannounced. He stilled, then scowled.
Ooh, the other woman clapped her hands. I don't know what that means, but it is delicious. This is better than anything you could see on Drury Lane.
Shut up, Dahlia, he said,
all exasperation. Dahlia. It seemed the right name for her, the kind of name that Felicity could never carry. When Dahlia did not reply, he turned back to Felicity.
How did you get here?
I took a hack, he cursed.
And how did you get here, into my rooms?
She stilled, keenly aware of the pins threaded into her hair. She couldn't tell him the truth. They were unlocked. He narrowed his gaze on her. He knew it was a lie.
And how did you get into the building?
She searched for an answer that might make sense, something other than the truth. Not finding one, she decided to simply ignore him. Moving to leave once more, she said, I apologize. I did not expect you to be here with your... She searched for the word. Friend.
She's not my friend.
Well, that's not very kind, Dahlia objected. And to think you were once my favorite.
I was never your favorite.
Certainly not now. She turned to Felicity. I am his sister.
Sister? A powerful wave of something she did not wish to name shot through her at the word. She tilted her head.
Sister?
The woman smiled, bold and broad, and for a moment Felicity almost saw a resemblance.
His one and only.
And thank God for that.
Ignoring Devil's snide remark, Grace approached Felicity.
You should come and see me.
Before she could answer, Devil leapt in.
She doesn't need to see you.
One red brow arched.
Because she's seeing you.
She's not seeing me.
The other woman turned to face her with a knowing smile.
I think I see. I don't see, if that helps, Felicity said,
feeling as though she ought to interject to end the strange conversation. The other woman tapped her finger to her chin, considering Felicity for a long while.
You will, eventually.
No one is seeing anyone. Dahlia, get out!
So very rude, Dahlia said,
coming forward, hands extended toward Felicity. When she set her own in them, Dahlia pulled Felicity close and kissed one cheek and then the other, lingering on the final bus to whisper, 72 Shelton Street. Tell them Dahlia welcomes you. She looked to her brother.
Shall I stay and play the chaperone?
Get out!
His sister smirked.
Farewell, brother.
And then she was gone, as though the whole scenario were perfectly ordinary. Which, of course, it wasn't, as it had started out with Felicity sneaking out her back garden without a chaperone, walking 3/4 of a mile and hiring a hack to bring her here, to the dead center of Covent Garden, where she'd never been before and for good reason, or so she imagined. Except now she was here in this mysterious place with this mysterious man, and mysterious women were whispering mysterious directions in her ear, and Felicity could not, for the life of her, think of a good reason not to be there. It was all terribly exciting.
"Don't look like that," he said as he closed the door behind his sister.
"Like what?"
"Like it's exciting."
"Why not? It is exciting."
"Whatever she told you, forget it."
Felicity laughed. "I don't think that is going to happen."
"What did she tell you?"
"It occurs that if she wished you to hear what she told me, she would have said it so you were able to do so." He pressed his lips together in a thin line, his scar going stark white. He did not like that answer.
"You stay away from Dahlia."
"Are you afraid she shall corrupt me?"
"No," he said sharply. "I'm afraid you shall destroy her."
Felicity's mouth dropped open. "I beg your pardon." He looked away, toward a sideboard where a crystal decanter sat, full of deep amber liquid. Like a dog scenting the hunt, he went for it, pouring himself a glass and drinking deep before turning back to her. "No, thank you," she said tartly. "I don't drink whatever it is that you did not offer me." He drank again.
"Bourbon."
"American bourbon?" He did not reply. "American bourbon is prohibitively expensive for you to be drinking it like water." He leveled her with a cool look before pouring a second glass and walking it to her, extending it with one long arm. When she reached for it, he pulled it back, dangling it out of reach, the silver ring on his thumb glinting in the light.
"How did you get in?"
She hesitated. Then, "I don't want the drink anyway." He shrugged his shoulders and poured her glass into his.
"All right. You don't wish to answer that. How about this one? Why are you here?"
"We have an appointment."
"I was planning to come to you," he said.
The idea of him climbing her trellis was not unwelcome, but she said, "I grew tired of waiting." He raised a brow at that.
"I am not at your beck and call."
She inhaled at the cool words, not liking the way they stung, not liking him much, if she were honest. "Well, if you did not expect me to come here, then perhaps you should not have left me a card with your direction."
"You shouldn't be in Covent Garden."
"Why not?"
"Because, Felicity Faircloth, you're looking to marry a duke and assume your rightful place as a jewel of the ton. And if some aging aristocrat saw you here, that would never happen."
He had a point, but oddly, at no time during her journey had she even considered the ton. She'd been too excited about what was to greet her at the other end of the calling card. "No one saw me."
"I'm sure not for lack of you sticking out like a daisy in dirt."
Her brows rose. "A daisy in dirt?" His lips flattened.
"It's a figure of speech."
She tilted her head. "It is." He drank.
"Covent Garden isn't for you, Felicity Faircloth."
"Why ever not?" Did he know that saying such things made her want to explore every nook and cranny of the place? He watched her for a long moment, his dark eyes inscrutable, and then nodded once, turned on his heel and marched to the far end of the room, pulling a cord. Perhaps he did know. "You needn't summon anyone to escort me out," Felicity said. "I found my way in."
"That much is clear, my lady, and I've no interest in having anyone escort you out. I can't risk you being seen."
He was an irritating man, and Felicity's patience began to fray. "Afraid I shall destroy you, as well as your sister?"
"It's not out of the realm of possibility. Haven't you, I don't know, a lady's maid or a chaperone or something?"
The question unsettled her. "I am a 27-year-old spinster. Very few people would think twice about me traveling sans chaperone."
"I'm certain your brother, your father, and any number of Mayfair toffs would think far more than twice to find you traveling sans chaperone to my offices."
Felicity brazened it through. You think having a chaperone would make it more acceptable for me to be here? He scowled.
No.
You think me more dangerous than I am?
I think you precisely as dangerous as you are.
The words, so forthright and without edge, gave her pause, sending a thread of something strange coursing through her. Something suspiciously like power. She inhaled sharply, and he leveled her with a look.
That's not exciting either, Felicity Faircloth.
She disagreed, but thought it best not to say so. Why do you insist on calling me by both of my names?
It reminds me that you are a fairy tale princess. Faircloth indeed, the fairest of them all.
The lie stung, and she hated herself for letting it do so, more than she hated him for speaking it. Instead of saying so, however, she forced herself to laugh at his unwelcome jest. His brows knit together.
You are amused.
Is that not what you intended? Did you not think yourself immensely clever?
How was I being clever?
He was going to make her say it, and that made her hate him more. Because I'm the opposite of fairest. He did not speak, and did not look away, and she felt she had to continue to make her point. I am the plainest of them all. When he still did not speak, she began to feel foolish and annoyed. Is that not our arrangement? She prompted. Are you not to make me beautiful? He was watching her even more intently now, as though she were a curious specimen under glass. And then,
yes, I shall make you beautiful, Felicity Faircloth.
She scowled at the intentional use of both of her names.
Beautiful enough to draw the moth to your flame.
The impossible made possible. And yet, how did you do it? He blinked.
Do what?
How did you ensure he wouldn't deny it? Half a dozen doyens of the ton turned up for tea this morning at our home, believing that I'm the future Duchess of Marwick. How? He turned his back on her, moving to a low table laden with papers.
I promised you the impossible, did I not?
But how? She couldn't understand. She'd woken that morning with a keen sense of impending doom, certain that her lie had been exposed. The Duke of Marwick had proclaimed her mad before all London, and her family had been ruined. But none of that had happened. Nothing near to that had happened. Indeed, it seemed that the Duke of Marwick had tacitly confirmed the engagement, or at least he had not denied it, which was impossible. Except this man, Devil, had made that precise promise and made good upon it. Somehow. Her heart had pounded with each successive gawking well-wisher, and something like hope had flared in her chest, alongside another emotion, startlingly akin to wonder, at this man who seemed capable of saving her and her family. So of course she'd come to see him. It had seemed, frankly, quite impossible not to. A knock sounded on the door, and he moved to answer it, swinging it open and allowing a dozen servants in from the hallway beyond, each holding large pails of steaming water. They entered without a word, without looking at Felicity, marching through the room to the far wall, where a doorway stood open to a dark space beyond. Her gaze flew to Devil's. What is that?
My bedchamber, he said simply. Did you not have a look when you picked my lock?
Heat roared to life on her cheeks. I didn't pick.
You did, though. And I don't understand how a lady procures the superior skill of lock-picking, but I hope you will one day tell me.
Perhaps that will be the favour you ask of me once you've brought me my besotted husband. One corner of his stern mouth twitched, as though he were enjoying their conversation.
No, my lady. That tale you shall offer freely.
The words were quiet and full of certainty, and she was grateful for the dim evening light, lest the unexpected flush they brought with them be obvious. With a little uncomfortable cough, she looked to the door to his bedchamber, where a light had flickered to life, bright enough to make the shadows within dance, but not enough to reveal anything of the space beyond. And then the servants returned, empty pails in hand, and Felicity knew exactly what they had done. Before they'd had a chance to file out and close the door behind them, Devil was shucking his waistcoat and making quick work of the buttons on the sleeves of the linen shirt beneath. Her mouth fell open, and he turned to enter the room beyond, calling over his shoulder as he disappeared.
"Well, we might as well begin."
She blinked, calling after him.
"Begin what?"
A pause. Was he disrobing? Then, from farther away,
"Our plans."
She hesitated. Perhaps she was misunderstanding the situation. "I beg your pardon, but are you about to bathe?" He peeked his head back around the edge of the door.
"As a matter of fact, I am."
He was no longer wearing a shirt. Felicity's mouth went dry as he disappeared back into the room, and she watched the empty doorway for long minutes until she heard the twin thuds of his boots and then the splash of water as he took to the bathtub. She shook her head in the empty front room of the apartments. What was happening? And then he called out,
"Lady Felicity, do you wish to shout from out there? Or are you coming in?"
"Coming in?" She resisted the urge to ask him to elaborate, and instead made her choice, knowing doing so could easily mark her a lamb to slaughter. "I am coming in." No, not lamb to slaughter. Moth to flame. Chapter 8. He'd been teasing her. He'd wanted to make the innocent Lady Felicity Faircloth reconsider her rash decision to turn up in his rooms uninvited, knowing that there was no earthly way she would join him in his bedchamber, let alone in his bedchamber as he bathed. And there he was, waist-deep in water in the copper tub, smirk upon his face, congratulating himself on delivering a proper lesson to the lady beyond, who would certainly never find cause to arrive, unchaperoned on his Covent Garden doorstep again, lest she be faced with proof of the baseness of the neighborhood, when the lady in question called out from the next room, "I am coming in." He barely had time to hide his surprise before Felicity Faircloth flounced into his bedchamber, glass of his hard-won bourbon in hand, as though she belonged there. To add insult to injury, he then found himself imagining what it might be like if she did, in fact, belong there. If it were perfectly normal for her to sit upon his bed and watch as he bathed the dirt of the day from his body, cleaning himself before he joined her there, on that bed, cleaning himself for her. Shit. This had all gone sideways. And there was no way to repair it, as he was naked in a pool of water, and she was fully clothed, hands clasped demurely in her lap, watching him with avid interest. Hers was not the only interest that was avid, it should be said. Not that his cock was going to have its interest slaked. This was not the kind of woman whom one fucked in the darkness. This was the kind of woman to be won over. Had she not waxed poetic about passion in her own bedchamber? Seducing Felicity Faircloth away from his brother would take more than one night in his rooms in Covent Garden. And it wouldn't happen in Covent Garden at all, as she would never be here again. He wasn't used to being concerned for people's safety on the bare-knuckle bastard's turf, but with her, he was far too concerned. He still wasn't clear how she'd made it here without running into trouble. The thought grated, and he found comfort in that, letting it overcome his first response to her. He was not the one who needed to be unsettled. She was. He forced himself to lean back, pulled a length of linen from the edge of the tub, and moved it with purpose.
"Once I'm clean, I intend to return you to Mayfair."
Her gaze flickered to where his arm moved, lazily scrubbing up his chest. He slowed his pace when she swallowed, a faint flush creeping up her neck. She drank, her eyes going wide and slightly watery as a little hack sounded at the back of her throat, a cough she clearly refused to release. After she recovered, she met his eyes, narrowing her own on him. "I know what you are doing."
"And what is that?"
"You are trying to scare me away from this place, and you should have thought about that before summoning me here."
"I didn't summon you," he said.
I left you my direction so that you could get me a message if necessary.
Why? She asked. He blinked.
Why?
Why would I need to get a message to you?